You're listening to Investify, preaching financial independence and assisting investors to achieve a more flexible and free lifestyle through smart financial planning and real estate investing. If leaving the corporate world and jumping into this thriving industry is what you desire, tune in and listen to stories of like-minded individuals who made the leap to financial independence.
Welcome to Invest to Friday. This is your host, Chad Rocky, aka Rocky the Realtor. Today, what I want to talk about is the buying process. And just as myself, as a realtor, really only work with, for the most part, buyers. I have some experience working with sellers as well, but my main focus, I would say, is working with buyers. And I really enjoy that aspect of it. So I'm just going to walk through the exact steps of from the initial call when I speak to somebody to basically closing and then staying in touch afterwards. So thought that might be helpful. So usually when I get a lead in, if either someone I meet at a meetup or it comes through the FI team or FI team website, maybe I'm bigger pockets, some source of maybe it's referrals, and I'll set up an initial call. And on that initial call, I will just tell a little bit about myself, my investment properties, my background, what I a little bit about my family, what I enjoy doing outside of work, and then talk about that same thing with the buyers, just to get a better understanding. Then we talk about their goals in real estate. And we talk about strategy. Do you want to rent by the room? Is this strictly an investment property? Is it single family? Is it multifamily? And so we'll vet out all those questions. Usually the next steps after that call is two things. One is if they do not have a lender, I'll introduce them to a couple lenders who are investor friendly. They know the process. They know the house hacking and can get creative. They're really good. They're really good with communication. One side note there, every once in a while, a buyer will bring their own lender, which is fine. I just caution that when does this lender work? If they're part of a Wells Fargo or, I don't know, Rocket Mortgage, any of these other like major lenders, typically I found they are 9-to-5 people, and it makes it very difficult to communicate with them on the weekend, on Sunday night, when we're putting in offers at 11 p.m. and trying to be competitive. If I can't get a hold of them, it makes it a lot more challenging. It's not always about the rate, I would say. It's also about communication, experience. And so when you're talking with lenders, just shop around and get different opinions. Ideally, they're going to pick up their phone on a weekend, on a Sunday night at 11 p.m. and be able to work with us. You want to build your team. So one side note on how to choose lenders. So from that follow-up call, introduce them to the lenders, and then I'll set a next step as far as, okay, speak with the lender next Monday. Let's you and I chat next Wednesday. Also, before getting off that call, what I'll do is I'll set up a criteria, like an MLS search criteria. So we want to talk, what's your budget? How many bed and bath? Any must-haves? Do you have to have a garage? A location? We talk about strategy there, specifically for Denver. If you want to short-term rent, there's certain areas that you can and cannot when it's not your primary house. And so thinking about the long-term of you live in it now, but 2 years from now when you move out, do you want the option to short-term rent it? If the answer is 100% yes, then we have to set our criteria around based off that conversation. So we'll have that conversation, get that MLS criteria set up. Then the buyer will speak with the lender and we'll have our follow-up call just to dial in. Okay, what are you approved at? Is our criteria match what you're approved for? And then we'll talk about timeline. I guess for this example, we can say that they're ready to buy. And how I have that conversation is we back into our date of when we want to start looking for houses. So for example, let's say someone's lease, they're renting currently, and their lease is up at the end of August. So they need to be out by the end of August. Ideally, you have 2 weeks to move in, usually. You don't want to have 1 day to move all of your stuff. So that puts us at, if we close on August 15th, that gives them 2 weeks to move their stuff and get out of their apartment. So if we're closing on August 15th, generally speaking, we can say a 30-day close. That's actually long. To be more competitive, you want to close quicker, generally speaking. But for this purpose, we'll just say it's a 30-day close. So August 15th, we back up 30 days. And now we're at July 15th is when we want to go under contract. At July 15th, I typically say I'm comfortable with 6 really hard focused weeks of looking is a pretty good time frame. I'm pretty confident we can find you something in 6 weeks. And that's not sacrificing either. We have some time to be a little bit picky as far as house. We don't need to just settle on the first one. Now, if we do settle on the first one, first week, that's fine. We could get a little creative there. But generally speaking, like 6 weeks, we want to start looking. So that puts us out July 15th would be back to essentially June 1st. So again, if we want to close August 15th, we need to start looking June 1st. Usually this timetable catches people by surprise. We can start looking sooner than what they initially think. And then to add into that of if there's things we need to do with your credit, maybe you need to pay off a credit card. Maybe you need to improve your credit score a little bit. So you want to have those conversations with lenders. It's really never too soon, but as soon as possible, even if you're a year out, you want to have that conversation in order to get things set up in place in the financial side of it. So that puts us at like June 1st starting to look. So that's a timetable. Some creative finance options. I do work with some lenders that essentially we can come off as a cash offer, meaning we can be competitive with cash offers. And so if we need to be that competitive, if we're in a situation where we're potentially going into here in the spring and the summer, is that there's a multiple offers and our offer is a 30-day close and we have our deadlines pushed pretty far out and we're up against a cash offer, we're pretty much going to lose every time. However, if you're working with the right team and you get your documents over to the lender soon, they can essentially get you basically approved all the way to the point where we can present our offer like it's cash so we can be competitive. So that's a really good idea. And again, why you want to start the conversations sooner rather than later. So we're going to be out looking at houses. Let's say week three, we come across something that we really like. At that point, the first thing I'll do is call the agent and I'll ask them if they have any offers in. If they don't have any offers in, I'll ask them a couple other questions too of what's important to the seller. How's the activity been? Meaning how many showings have you had? If they have no offers in, and they haven't really had a lot of showings, that tells me that we could probably come in a little under asking, especially if it's been on the market for a little while. If it's a brand new listing, this is the first weekend, and they had 25 showings, and they have three offers, it's a different conversation with the buyers of how do we need to get this house? And so it's all house dependent. And we can set up our strategies differently. If seller concessions are very important for the buyer and be able to cover a lot of the closing costs, or able to get the 2-1 buy down, we can talk about what's more important. Is it monthly payment or is it cash in your pocket today? And we can structure our offer in that way and potentially get those seller concessions. If it's a very competitive house, then that probably isn't an option. We won't be competitive and we won't get it. So that's some of the communication that I'm having with the agent to just figure out how we want to structure this. I'm also looking at comps. So I'll go in and I'll pull up what houses have recently sold in the neighborhood at for what price. We want to be usually not the top number. If the house that we're looking at is a 700K and the closest comp is at 650, I don't really have a lot of confidence it's going to appraise. And at that point, probably overpaying for it. Now, sometimes in a very competitive market, you have to do that. But generally speaking, we want to see 2, 3, 4, 5 houses somewhere in the middle higher than what we're going to offer on this house. And that can also dictate what we are going to offer. That can help that conversation of, and also now if we're looking to offer 700 and there's a lot of comps, 750, 800, 850, the majority of the comps are higher, then we can tell, like, all right, this is a pretty good deal. We should jump on this pretty quickly. So that's one way to strategize as far as offer price. I'll then write up the offer, send it to the buyer. We'll walk through the whole entire contract, answer any questions, make sure they're going to be in town on the closing date, make sure you have earnest money liquid and available to either wire or bring the cashier's check to the title company by X date, make sure all the names are spelled correctly and just go over it with a fine tooth comb. Then I'll submit it to the agent and I will sell myself and I'll sell the buyer and I'll sell the lender as all being very competent. And the goal is we want to sell them on, we will get to the closing table. You want to have really good communication. And then I'll text the agent just saying, hey, we sent it over. Can you confirm it was received? I will also have the lender call the agent, reassuring them that the buyer is well qualified and we will get to the closing table. So we want to stand out versus all the other offers. And we just want to reassure this agent that we will close. Let's just assume that we get our offer accepted. Once we do that, then a couple first steps is getting the earnest money set up. The next one will be getting our inspection set up, which usually I'll take care of that if the buyer so chooses. I have a couple inspectors I have go-tos that I can just communicate with them and get it lined up for the next day or the day after. And then we can go to the inspection if we'd like. Otherwise, we would just have a call with the inspector and go over all the findings and kind of work through the inspection process. We then can submit an objection if that's part of our original offer, and then negotiate a little bit back and forth with the seller of what they're going to cover and what they're not going to cover. After that, we have our appraisal. So the appraisal, the lender orders the appraisal, and nothing really we need to do there. Typically, the listing agent would provide comps and any information about the house. Maybe they did renovations, and we want to give that to the appraiser just to show why we think this house is valued at our offer price. If that comes back as at the contract price, which say 90% of the time it does, then we're good. If it comes back above, that's a cherry on top. It really means nothing, but it's just knowledge, or like I said, a cherry on top of it. It's a feel good that the buyer is purchasing it lower than what the appraiser said it's worth. So that's a good thing, but nothing really changes. If it comes back lower, that's where we need to go back to the negotiating table. So either the buyer needs to bring the difference. If our contract price is $600 and it appraised at $590, either the buyer can bring $10,000, literally cash, extra to the closing table. The seller can drop the price to $590, or there can be a combination of both. I would say typically there's some negotiating there and we can figure it out usually, but it could be it's at $595. So the buyer has to bring $5,000 extra and the seller drops it. So that's the appraisal process. Then really the last kind of deadline on our contract is the loan availability. The loan availability is really the last out where we could still potentially get our earnest money back. It's really reserved only for if the loan falls apart, meaning the buyer lost their job, the buyer went out and bought a boat, something happened where they no longer qualify. If that's the case, then we could terminate based on loan availability and still get earnest money back. We try not to get to that point, and rarely does it come to that point. So then once we have our what's called clear to close, meaning everything is good with the lender, the loan's official, then it's really just setting up the closing day and time. You need about an hour generally. Usually you're going to need to go to the title office, the title company, and spend about an hour. You can close remotely, meaning if you're out of town or in Yosemite or wherever you are, if they're out-of-state investors, we could have a notary basically go to wherever you are. I almost had a buyer literally sign in Yosemite. They were there camping. It did not end up coming to that, but potentially would have been possible. There is an extra fee for that. Usually it's like $250. So something to just keep in mind, but an option. And we usually will need like an extra day or two because they will physically mail the signed copies back to the title company. So we need a little extra time to make that happen. So just want to talk about those things, but then we close, and majority of the time, you'll just get the keys right there. Sometimes there's what's called a post-close occupancy agreement where the buyer allows the seller to stay in the house. Sometimes the seller will pay rent for that. If we need to be very competitive with our offer, then they would not pay rent. They could get it for free, but all things negotiable. So then we close, then you move in. And at that point, if you're doing work, we have access to a lot of general contractors, subcontractors. We can help with getting lease templates set up and getting it rented. Or if it's a short-term rental, I have automated messages and price lab settings and the whole nine yards of us as the FI team. We don't go away the day you close. I still talk to buyers that purchased 2-3 years ago and just use a sounding board for them and throughout the process and even beyond. So I hope that helps. A little bit of a rundown as far as the entire buying process. Certainly, if there's any questions, reach out to us. But that's it for today. We'll see you next time.
That's it for this episode of Investify. We hope that these nuggets of real estate wisdom lead to more savvy financial planning and a clearer path towards financial freedom. For more content like this, subscribe to the show at investify.com. Don't forget to leave a rating and share it with your friends. Together, we can transform more real estate newbies into successful and clever investors. Thank you so much for listening. See you on the next one.